With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, no Howard Beck this week, which gives me the opportunity to bring in someone that has been just pleading to come back on the podcast. It's like everywhere I saw Sarah Kustok, she's like, you don't have me on anymore. We don't talk anymore. We don't do this anymore. And I said, listen, Sarah, I do a pod with Beck where every single week, you know, we're kind of locked in there. But I promised if the opportunity came, I would bring Sarah Kustok back to the show. And here she is. Back on the podcast, Yes Network analyst, Fox Sports 1, many other jobs. Sarah Kustok joining me on the show. Hi, Sarah.
Mannix, one, thanks for having me. Two, you're not lying. Three, it was because I wanted to be on with Beck.
Ah, with there you. It is. You wanted to be on the Friday pod. I forgot. Yes. You wanted to be on the Friday version. Damn it.
So there's
I misread.
To what you're saying, it's just I wanted to be talking to Howard Beck right now and not having a conversation with you.
Not the first time, Sarah, I misread the signals from
Details.
A woman. Not the first time I misread signals. Believe me, I'm aware. I'm keenly aware. A bunch I want to get into with you. You're obviously tied in with Brooklyn. They've got their media day tomorrow, or media availability with Sean Marks and Steve Nash. I want to touch on them towards the end. But I am fresh off a trip to my favorite city on earth, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the Celtics evened up the series against the Bucks last night in the most improbable of ways. Like, if you were sitting there, Sarah, before the game thinking, you know what? Boston wins this because of a huge Al Horford game. Because Al Horford is going to take over the fourth quarter, outplay Giannis Antetokounmpo, and bring the Celtics back from the dead. That would have been last on my list of things I would have expected. But there you had it. Al Horford, 35 years old, turning back the clock, dunking on Giannis, going 6-for-6 in the fourth quarter, 2-for-2 from three-point range, and just carrying the Celtics over the finish line in what has been the most physical series I've seen in a long time. Like, I'm watching from my media seat, and every possession, there are bodies all over the floor. It looked like Lambeau Field out there in Milwaukee with the physicality of this series. What did you think of Celtics-Bucks last night? And I guess, how do you see this series moving forward?
There's a lot of layers to this. One, I will say that shouldn't have been last on your list because Al has been balling. Like, you look at what he's done this postseason, and I'll take it back to the series against Brooklyn. He has been so impressive, but you're spot on. I think it was just a steady build too through the game. You see the confidence. That dunk that he had on Giannis was filthy. And I think
thought real quick, Sarah, like, yeah. Did it surprise you I thought he was going to get thrown out of the game for a split second because he dunks and he comes down and then the arm extends and hits Giannis in the face. Now, that in and of itself is a play the referees are going to take a long look at regardless. But because it happened to the ex-MVP, there was something in my mind going, whoa.
Do you think he'd get a two? I thought maybe.
I thought that was, look, hey. They gave Giannis a technical for growling in Al's direction. Like, we don't know what these referees are going to call any given time. Draymond got tossed out of a game because he grabbed the jersey of someone. Like, sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to all this. So in my head, I wondered if Al was going to get tossed for that.
Well, thank goodness he didn't and changed the dynamic of the game. But no, I mean, I think that was something, a little something to it, but he was on his way down. And I think there was a force that he played with. And I think he's able, that's what impressed me so much about, first before we get into the rest of the series, but has impressed me about Boston, just the complement of how they are so connected with their roster that even if someone's off, even if Tatum's off, even if, you know, whoever is rolling, just being able to find and pick apart this Milwaukee defense, which I don't think that's something I would anticipated of this team. And we've seen it through the latter, but you've been more tied in with watching each and every Celtics game throughout the latter part, in particular the season and the postseason. They pass the ball so well in like finding just where openings are in different points. And when you talk about the physicality of the series, that's obviously a characteristic of both of these teams. And so you would anticipate coming in that Milwaukee would play that way. That's been a part of how their defense is. It's based on the personnel. Similarly with Boston, though, but there are possessions that there's just like the floor seems so small. And there are just walls. And there's times I'm watching plays and I'm like, man, that's a poor shot, or you need better shot selection, or whatever happens, taking care of the ball things. But so much of that to me is just predicated on not only the personnel that they have, the individual defenders that they have, but then collectively how both of these groups play as a team, which is why when you try and forecast, okay, what is this going to look like in the next couple of games, even that game last night, and I know it was on the road, there's so many swing possessions, momentum possessions. Someone knocks down a three. I mean, there was times that I felt like, oh man, Milwaukee really has this in hand, and you were there. So I think it can skew you based on hearing the crowd or what's happening. And I'm like, oh no, like Boston just hits a three. Now they're within two. Like it felt like Milwaukee had a double digit lead. Now all of a sudden this is a one possession game. And for all of those reasons, it just to me is about sometimes some of those other players. Do we expect Giannis to have monster games? Yes. Would you expect that? I know Jason was bouncing back from a tough shooting night the previous game. But to me, it's about those complementary players. And that's where when you look at the next three games, Boston is so much scarier to me because they have not only what they do defensively, which I was wowed at. You could think what you want about the way Brooklyn looked offensively against them or Durant or all of those things, but it's how they function offensively. They find ways because of the multiple options they have or the depth that they have. And I think for Milwaukee without Chris Middleton, it was never so glaring to me than in the game last night of, man, how much they miss him and how much they miss him down the stretch and to relieve some of that pressure off of Giannis.
Oh, you watch them during the regular season and their down the stretch offense is a lot of two-man game with Giannis and Middleton. So not having him out there, you lose a big part of what you do offensively. Now they've been able to get away with it through two of the first three games of the series because Jrue Holiday was, you know, good offensively. But like, if you're counting on Jrue Holiday...
5 of 22
in game four, and he took 30 shots in game three. So like, that's not Jrue Holiday's game. Like, they've had to lean hard on him to be the second scorer with Middleton out, and he wasn't able to do it in game four, and that put Giannis in the position of having to do everything out there. And you could see, like, even when Giannis was going to the basket successfully in that third quarter, I think he had 13 points in the third quarter, played really well. Boston continues to just totally shit the bed in third quarters in this series. Even when he was successful, Boston was grinding him. They were bumping him. They were hitting him. They were knocking him down. They were making it hard on him when he went to the basket. I felt like in the fourth quarter, all that bumping, all that grinding, it paid off for the Celtics because Giannis was gassed. Like, you saw that sequence with like 5 minutes to go when he gets tangled up with Marcus Smart, and Smart's trying to help him up off the floor for reasons I don't really understand, but he was trying to help him up off the floor.
Even after he kind of kicked him a little. He kicked him a little.
That's what Smart said afterwards. Smart said he can't.
Well, he took a second. And he's like, all right, I'm out.
I'm surprised Marcus didn't just like fall sprawling backwards after taking that kick. But like Giannis couldn't get up. He was so tired. And after that exchange, Mike Budenholzer pulled him out for a minute. Like 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and he was yanked for a minute just to give him a little bit of rest for the final four plus minutes. So I don't know. When I think about how Milwaukee adapts offensively, like, do you do more with Pat Connaughton? I mean, good shooter, tends to play pretty well in Boston because he's from the area. All right, well, maybe. Grayson Allen, Wesley Matthews, do you run more plays for Bobby Portis? There just aren't a lot of answers for Milwaukee offensively. And if you do kind of shift away from Giannis early in the game to take some of that stress off him, you run the risk of being down by like 10 at halftime and 15 in the third and being in all kinds of trouble. Look, I don't know what the best atmosphere has been so far during this postseason, but it is going to be out of control at the Garden on Wednesday. Like, the Boston fans are going to come in full force. And that's the kind of game I think that could slip away from Milwaukee pretty quickly if they don't lean heavily on Giannis. So it is Mike Budenholzer, I think, has done a really good job in this series, you know, coming up with different strategies to free Giannis. I don't know what kind of cards he has, like, to make his team more productive offensively.
Well, and that's a problem because I do think it's the supplement. You have to rely this much on Giannis. I mean, you look at, you have to. That's a part of it. That's also, you know, former MVP, one of the greatest players. So you do that. To your point, though, when, like, even to me, you bring up Portis, like, look at both Portis and Lopez. It's some juncture. Can you take advantage of what you have with your size on the inside? And I think that Boston does such a good job with how they wall things off. I don't know. Is Robert Williams set to play in game five? I don't know what the situation is.
I tell you what, even if he is cleared to play, I would not start him. He has not been the same player since coming back from the knee injury late in that Brooklyn series. He's still been a shot blocker. He's still been valuable, but I would start Al Horford and Grant Williams. Grant Williams didn't play well in game four, but I like the Grant Williams matchup against Giannis with Al Horford on Brooke Lopez, taking Lopez maybe away from the basket. That's one thing that Budenholzer is going to have to adjust to. Like, Al Horford was open every single time he caught the ball. Like, nobody within 10 feet of him out there on the floor. Like, I like the idea of forcing Lopez, who's been a shot blocker all series, since he's been back from that back injury, forcing him away from the rim and letting Grant Williams deal with Giannis on the other end.
Yeah, well, a couple things with that. One, when you're talking about one side and Horford being like that, to me, it was after what, game one or two, you could probably point to a lot of them. Everyone talking about, oh my God, Boston took X number of 3 points. Like, that's what Milwaukee does. That's what their defense is predicated on. Like, that's exactly what they want you to do. They want to bait you in. They'll still try and speed you up and rush you and recover, but they are protecting the paint at all costs. Like, that is exactly what their defense is designed to do, because they believe in seven games, you're not going to have that many games where you are on fire from three, that it's going to be able to overcompensate what they do on the inside and from the inside out. But you're looking at a situation now where that's what you saw with Horford. I think we've seen it with Willie, like, go down the list of players, guys see one go through, especially on the road, see one go through, see go to go through. Like, that's a swing in the balance of what happens when you have some of those smaller guys to pull out, whether it's a Brook Lopez, Portis, whoever. But on the flip side of things, I think for Milwaukee offensively, so much of it comes down to, like, in my estimation, and we talked about this, like, Jrue Holiday is the bellwether of this team. Like, if he's able to find, and to me, it wasn't just the shots that he missed, and he was excellent defensively, but what shots are you taking? And I would credit Boston's defense for forcing a lot of those, but there was a lot of long twos. There was a lot of isolation. It's stuff. If you're trying to bully your way to get to the basket or get to the paint or getting good ball movement and open shots. But to me, it was a lot of, everyone's just spaced out. You're trying to get Giannis off the play or have him initiate the offense from a different spot, but you're looking at this set Boston defense that you're taking a couple dribbles and taking a long two. And those, if you're not hitting shots, like that sucks the life out of an offense. And I think there was too many possessions where you saw a lot of that. It does, in talking about getting guys involved, like Wesley Matthews had some good shot. The possessions I love so much about Milwaukee, whether it was Giannis and whether they put him on the wing and had him work that mid post area, and that weak side 3-pointer is going to be open or going to be a good look. The thing with Boston's defense, though, they're so rangy, they're so quick, they're so connected, they cover so much ground. Someone that is open, you're not going to be able to make a clean pass. Like there was so many times that you're catching it off your shooting pocket, you're catching it from different places that it triggers enough that it's a half second, it's a second. And to me, like those are the nuances of the Boston defense, where for as much as you want to get other guys involved, like the cleaner looks they're going to get, you could still put a ton of pressure on Giannis, or if you want to double him, or how are you going to play him, or throw different bodies. But at the same token, you're not going to get a lot of clean looks for other guys. And that's where that doesn't change to me that I think Milwaukee can still get some games or still function well offensively. But like, a ton comes down to, can you get some early offense? Can you get some runouts? Like that factors into what stops are you getting on the other end of the floor? How are you getting a chance to get some early offense so Boston isn't just getting back, setting down? And then you have to start figuring out, okay, how are we going to work this isolation with how well they switch and how well they cover ground?
You know why I like Boston, though, going into game 5 is that we still haven't had a Jason Tatum breakout game yet. Like he was good in the second half of game 2, but that was a Jaylen Brown game. Jaylen Brown had 25 in the first half, set the tone for the rest of the game. He was excellent in the fourth quarter of game 4, had 12 points, but was inefficient the first 3 quarters. We have yet to have that big Jason Tatum game, and I gotta believe he's got it in him. Like, I gotta believe that there's one breakout game. In this game 5, a lot on the line, the crowd behind him, the energy in the building. I feel like this is the game that Jason Tatum breaks out and plays really well. That's just a gut feeling I have going into this one. It could be, this could be one of those games I think the Celtics win by double digits. I really believe that because I think Milwaukee is a little bit tired. I think Boston's figured some things out on them defensively, specifically, as you mentioned, with Jrue Holiday. And I think Tatum's going to have a big game. That's kind of my gut feeling. Going into this one.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I want to bounce around a little bit on a couple of different things. It was like 3 days ago, Sarah, that I had like my shovel here and I was ready to just pour dirt on James Harden's grave. Like, I was done with James Harden. And I was ready to write the column, and I still might. Like, what do you do, Daryl Morey, with James Harden, who has not been the James Harden that Morey had in his years in Houston? Then game 4 of the series against Miami comes around and James Harden breaks out. 31 points, 8 of 18 from the floor, 6 of 10 from 3-point range. He hands out 9 assists. He pulls down 7 rebounds. He was excellent in that game. And it kind of, as this series shifts back to Miami tonight, I don't know which James Harden's going to show up. Like, that's a big part of all this. I think Embiid is going to be there and motivated. We're going to get to why in a minute. But, like, do you have any read on, you know, what James Harden's going to look like night after night? You saw him for a season and a half in Brooklyn. Like, what version of James Harden is left? Like, how close can he get to the player we saw for years in Houston?
My instinct to that is James Harden is probably asking himself in some regard the same questions. And after spending a year and a half or so that he was with Brooklyn, watching him come over from Houston, obviously there was a lot of layers and factors to him, his time in Houston. Once one, that style of play coming to Brooklyn, that first half a season last year, this year, the first half a season going to Philly. James Harden is such a cerebral player. For as much as we think about him as, you know, the scorer and you know, having scoring titles and what he did in terms of putting up numbers, the sheer numbers, the biggest thing that jumped out to me, especially when he first got to Brooklyn, was how much he just thought, analyzed, and looked at, okay, how can I best fit in and best help this group flourish? And so I think for him, and in the first, we saw through a couple games, we saw it this year. For him, it's not, it's read and react with the defense, and he'll tell you he's taking what the defense gives, you know, all of that stuff. But in terms of personnel, roster, what's needed, scoring, passing, facilitating, all this stuff, I think for him, trying to figure out the exact role and how he best does that, while also trying to evaluate where he's at with his body and how it functions. And throughout the course, I know a lot was made, and he maybe said it again recently, of early on this season about, he talked about confidence. But to me, I'm like, oh, no, he's not necessarily, he's confident as can be. He thinks he's, you know, one of the greats. But it's about confidence in your body and how it's moving and what I could still do and how, whether it's that burst or getting to the basket, the first step, the things that we've seen drop in some ways and how it's digressed. I think for him, it's still figuring out how to manage, what do I need to do for this team? And how can I still do that with the way that my body is functioning? And so do I think that now he maybe hit a point where he comes off this big game and an important game in the playoffs, or as much as we talk about him showing up in the playoffs, like, I think he's going to be tremendous. And I'm not sure I would be ready to pick Philly to close this. I'm back and forth. I can't wait to see what happens with the series. But I think something triggered in him and how he needs to play and how he can play alongside Joel and with what Maxey's doing, what type of option he is in terms of scoring. I don't think that means necessarily he's going to be this big point production scorer necessarily through the course of the rest of the series. But I think there's things with him that part of it is actually what he's doing physically on the floor. Part of it is just with his head, how he needs to look at a defense or look at a team or how it is that he helps an offense function. And so I think something changed. And for us talking about it being a vintage James Harden game or back or whatever, like there is ebbs and flows and he's aging. So you're not going to get a game like that, I don't think necessarily, but I do think the way that he could be most helpful to his team and still be a all-star caliber player is something that I think there could be a steady build from that game to go alongside with Joel and go alongside with the rest of the way that this team has been playing and what they're starting to figure out.
Well, he doesn't have to be the fulcrum of the offense in the way he was in Houston. He doesn't have to score at that level. Not with Embiid back, Tobias Harris, who's played really well these playoffs, Tyrese Maxey, who's been out of his mind during these playoffs. You have to be a playmaker.
And that's the difference.
Yeah.
The Maxey thing's a difference.
And look, despite the fact that James clearly has lost a step off that burst, like it's not just referees are calling games differently. He's not as explosive. You can see that. And he also doesn't have the same confidence in that burst. Like I watch him in this series and you see situations where Houston James Harden would have just attacked and gotten to the rim and used his body to get in front of a defender. He doesn't do that. He'll move the ball and he'll be a little more conservative with his approach there. But he's still an elite passer. Like when he gets in the paint, he's got his head up and he's finding guys. And that's really all the Sixers really need for him. Like be efficient-ish. Keep your turnovers down. Had 6 in that last game. That's not good. And keep moving that ball around and let Joel get his shots and let Tyrese Maxey get his shots and Tobias Harris get his shots. And then when the situation calls for it and you got a mismatch, namely like Tyler Hero, when you're staring him down, go at him and try to make plays that way. I think that's what Harden has to kind of focus on. He remains, Sarah, though, he's like the most terrifying potential contract I can imagine. Like what the Sixers do with him in the offseason will be one of the most fascinating subplots of this offseason, because you would think he came into this situation believing he was going to get a 5-year, $277 million deal. But the idea of giving him that, knowing what he's probably going to look like in the back end of that deal, which could be like 2 years from now, when he's at, say, what,
you 34? You could have questions about the next 2 seasons.
It's tough because there are parts of his game that are going to age really well. Like he could almost have like a Chris Paul-esque turn in a way because he is such a good playmaker. But Chris Paul was never really reliant on that burst. He was like, I'm going to get to this spot, I'm going to make a mid-range jump shot, and that's it. James Harden needed that burst, needed to get to the rim, needed to get to the free throw line to be successful. He's how the Sixers and James Harden operate this offseason is really going to be interesting, because the Sixers have wed themselves to him. Like they made this deal, they gave up all their assets. They have to find a way to bring him back, which gives Harden some leverage. But at the same time, like, can you imagine Harden at like age 38 on that contract making $60 million per year? Like that's a killer. That's a killer for Embiid too. Like this, how this works out with them, with Harden, like, could really determine if Joel Embiid wins a championship in Philadelphia. Like, it's that serious, these negotiations.
But I think everything you said about relying on that burst or a multitude of things, like, to me, that's, we all or people overlook the ease of which a player should just be able to adjust and acclimate to where they're at. And that's where I think, and you talk about his game aging or the thing, his vision and ability to, you said elite passer. He, watching him on a day-to-day basis, that was the thing that blew me away. And I'm talking about in the half court, I'm talking about in the full court, the things that he sees a step ahead. And so that's where you look at next season. And even like, I know it was a function of him and how they played, but like he was a guy I watched would get in the mid-range. He's got size, he's got strength. He was so programmed to not take a mid-range shot or not take a short shot or just get into the basket, the line, or a three-point shot. That's to me where I think over time in a training camp or a summer, things can change where he will have time to adjust. Cause I think he's a player that's all a part of it, or how he's playing next to Embiid or different stuff like that. Like to me, that's where we assume, oh, he's been with them for what, a month and a half, 2 months. And yeah, you should just figure it out. And I think there's a lot more to it when you add in new team, new players, and now you're in a playoff situation and trying to figure out exactly where you're at with your body. And so those are the things that I think give me more optimism that he'll continue to figure that out. And it's not going to look the same as he was. And it's still a scary proposition of that contract and what it looks like on the back end. But there are things that I think we just often assume it should be a quick adjustment or a quick fix. And I don't always think it's that easy.
So many weird, this is a podcast for another day, but so many tough contract calls, like Zach LaVine in Chicago, extending Damian Lillard in Portland. Like, these are franchise altering decisions these GMs have to make. And the easy thing to do is just give these guys the money, but you know, you pay a price for that if they don't wind up living up to that contract. So short term, we don't know what we're going to get from James Harden. Kind of got a good feeling that Joel Embiid's going to have himself a pretty good rest of the series. Joel Embiid does not win MVP. As we record this, the official voting tally is not out, but ESPN reported that Nikola Jokic will become a back-to-back winner, getting the MVP award. How'd you feel about that? Like, I don't know if you voted for this.
I don't have a vote. And so I think my ability to have a thought on this is different if I actually had to put pen to paper, punch the keyboard, whatever it happens. I have no, if I had a vote, it would be Embiid. But I have no qualms, no problem with, I thought Jokic was tremendous this season. I think there's so many different, if you are a voter, I think, and I'm curious to ask you, cause I assume that you are, how you're shaded a little bit towards who a player was playing with, what the record was, the concept of Jokic not, you know, having two of their best players. Like, there's so many different factors that are gray areas that I think it just depends on your thoughts and opinions on it. But what I will say is, in terms of, like, I just struggle. So it's a regular season award, and I struggle so much with it. No matter how much you tell people that, no matter how much that's understood, the fact that we don't find out until now, I think just shades what everyone thinks or how you feel. And it's easy to look back and say, well, you could have kind of assumed this, or you thought you'd have a longer route, whatever. And yeah, is it crummy that we're talking about an MVP that's not been playing the postseason for a while? But like, that's not when the votes were put in. That's right. Not why you're voting. That's not what you're voting about. What were your thoughts? So I have no, I think you're splitting hairs when you look at Embiid, when you look at Jokic, you look at Giannis, like, you are splitting hairs because all of them were tremendous this year.
Yeah. The Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, you could pick one of those three and be fine. I'm just actually hoping when the voting comes out that, and I know I'll be wrong, that nobody voted for somebody else in that crew. Somebody will have, like, I don't know, like Jason Tatum as in the top three. Like, just something like just a little outlandish. I voted for Embiid. I don't have a problem with Jokic winning it. He put up monster numbers. He dominated like every advanced statistic that's out there. And look, he overcame obstacles of his own with that Nuggets team. They had Michael Porter Jr. for what, 9 games this year? They had Jamal Murray for 0 games this year. Denver, with their front office, done a really good job of supplementing the roster with talented young players. Bones Highland was the latest to kind of join that mix. But, you know, you're missing kind of 2 all-star caliber players, and you push that team to the number 6 seed in the Western Conference. It's pretty good. 48 wins. It's pretty good. But, like, to me, beyond the numbers for Embiid, which you can make a statistical case for him just like you can for Jokic. He led the NBA in scoring this year. He put up monster rebounding numbers, field goal percentage numbers. He was great statistically. But I thought how he handled the Ben Simmons stuff was a checked box in Embiid's category. Like, it wasn't just like you were missing Ben Simmons. Like, Ben Simmons didn't tear his ACL and was forced to miss the season. Ben Simmons showed up at training camp and declared he didn't want to play with that team. And all season long, the Simmons shadow was hanging over the Sixers team. And Joel Embiid is the most powerful athlete in Philadelphia. He could have sicked the mob on Ben Simmons. He could have forced Philadelphia to make a trade that Daryl Morey didn't want to do by coming out and saying publicly, just get rid of this guy. Let's move on. We've got a chance to win a championship this year. Get something back in return. Instead, he went the complete other direction. He expressed support for Ben Simmons every time he was asked about him. He said they had enough to win as is. And look, they were pretty good in that stretch before they made the Simmons trade. Seth Curry was really good for that team. You know, obviously, Maxey busted out in his second year. He handled that situation as well as anyone could have possibly handled a difficult situation. I think that, coupled with the production on the floor, was enough to edge Jokic and Giannis in on my ballot.
And those are the type of things, which I don't disagree with you, but those are the type of things when you talk to to voters or hear from them, we've heard this in years past, that those are the type of things that some people factor in, some people take into account. Some are looking at the bigger picture of everything you're dealing with and handling, and others are just, okay, let's look at exactly the play on the floor and were you the most valuable player to your team in this entire league? Some may look at just, were you the best player in the league? I mean, that's where I think there's fine lines with how you look at it and how you perceive that. But again, I really struggle. I have conversations now with people talking about Jokic still, he's not even in the postseason. He's not, no one knows that. Like, you don't know that. You cannot speculate that. Moving forward, you can never anticipate that. So to me, that shouldn't even be a part of the conversation. And while it feels off when you're announcing an MVP who's not playing, that's not a part of it.
I do also get a little, I mean, look, advanced stats are part of today's NBA. But Jokic's, it seemed like every time someone made a case for Jokic, the strongest part of that case was the advanced stats. And I don't know, maybe I'm a little too old school on that.
I don't disagree with that. And I do think the way you said it is, it's the strongest part of the case. But I also, to me, watching him, like, that's where I think it, the dialogue on that sometimes overshadows just watching him.
Yeah, you're right.
How supremely talented he is and how dominant he could be in so many different areas on top of playing without different players. Like, I think because those advanced stats are so highlighted, it's like, no. You also watch him and he's brilliant with how he plays. And so I think there's factors in that where you can't just, I think now everyone just assumes, oh, it's just about the advanced stats with him and in the analytics. And I think there's a case, let's remind you, when you actually watch him, he does really, really insane, amazing, incredible things on the floor.
Four straight years, a foreign-born player, MVP. What's happened to American basketball, Sarah? It's just going down the toilet right there. Going down.
Love to see it. Love to see it.
David Stern would have loved to see it. David Stern loved the globalization of the game. He would
look
have
at
loved
that.
To
even if it would have been MVP. Like, look at your top three. Exactly. You're not even talking about MVPs. The no. Top three candidates. All three.
And look, I'm going to guess Luka Doncic is going to get in that 4 or 5 mm-hmm. slot, maybe. I don't know who would get the other part. Tatum, maybe. Ja Morant will probably be in that mix.
Yep.
Four of the top five will probably be foreign-born players, which... And that may not change in the foreseeable future. Like, all these guys we're talking about are in their prime, under, I believe, the age of 30, all of them. So, they're going to be playing like that for years to come.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture,
business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let me finish in your neck of the woods. On Wednesday, Sean Marks and Steve Nash will have some media availability. As we record this, Kyrie Irving is a martyr. Kevin Durant is on Twitter. Wouldn't call everything awesome in Nets land. What are you expecting, you know, Sean Marks and Steve Nash to kind of say? And like, you know, how, what are the, tell me this, like, what are the biggest issues the Nets have to address going into this offseason? Because the talent at the top is still there. Whatever you think of Durant and Irving, they're still two of the top individual players in the NBA. Joe Harris coming back is going to be huge for that team. They missed him, as you know, on both ends of the floor. What's priority number one for Sean Marks this offseason?
Well, one, I think it starts with what your roster looks like and who has, what's happening with, first point to Kyrie Irving. But I assume that that's done and he signs and all of that stuff. But the other individuals.
Oh, you never assume anything with Kyrie, Sarah. You never assume anything with Kyrie.
I'm going for the purpose of our podcast. So we're not talking for another hour. I'm going
playing
to assume that.
Playing in Australia next year for all.
But. Well, you said it. Like, I think that's where when I don't know what Sean's going to say, I don't know what Steve's going to say, but when you do look at the team and you look at the player, you had three players that, or I should sorry, say two recently, but Joe Harris, who was such an important component to this team. And since he only played in the first, 14 games or whatever, by the time you get midseason, end of the season, postseason, you're not, it's not even a factor because he has been out for so long, but I think you cannot overstate how important he is to this team. And like you said, on both ends of the floor, Seth Curry just had surgery. Ben Simmons just having surgery. So what it looks like for their timetable, the rehab, them just being ready for preseason training camp. What happens with Bruce Brown? Like he became a really important part of this team. He's going to, I imagine, have a lot of other interest around the league, but their wing depth or their ability to have weight, who are you surrounding Kevin and Kyrie with? And I think that's where it all starts. What the front court looks like. Nicholas Claxton was the one player in the postseason and even towards the end of the season, dealt with some illness issues. He dealt with some injury, but so he really had hit his stride early in the season and was out for a while. We saw it when he was coming back. I think he's someone, there's a lot of optimism for the versatility he brings on the inside, but what does your front court look like? Because by the end of the season, and especially in the postseason, you were so much picking and choosing such a unique skill set for who you were going to use, how you were going to use them. To me, it's just how do you figure out to best surround and even like ball handlers and play. Like Goran Dragic really by the end of the year was the only true point guard that you had because Kyrie Irving in many cases is so much better off the ball. So can you find someone that's a true point guard? What happens with Patty Mills? Like there's a lot of questions with this group that I think you start making decisions, but where do you start those decisions with of who you're filling it in with and how you just give these guys the best opportunity to be playing with others that complement where their strengths are.
So I'm not going to be there, obviously, on Wednesday. I'll be in Boston for game five. No, unfortunately, I will not be pop again. But if I was there, maybe my first question would be like, what just happened with Ben Simmons? Because, you know, all throughout that Boston series, it was being reported that he was targeting game three, then targeting game four. Then all of a sudden, he has back soreness before game four, doesn't play, and then has a pretty significant back surgery that is going to sideline him for a couple of months. You know, hopefully he'll be healthy in time for training camp, but you don't just kind of, you know, on a whim have back surgery. Like that's real. Was that as confusing to you as it was to me? Because like, I don't know how you go from almost playing to back surgery. Like that sort of struck me as odd.
Well, it was confusing in the sense of all signs were pointing to the fact that he was going to play and play in the series and play in game four. And I think you were getting different reports from, it was not coming from the team, but you were getting different reports of saying when it was targeted and when he was going to play.
But even Steve Nash, that who was very aggressive in saying, there is no timetable. Like we're not targeting anything. We're not doing this. He was very clear on that. He wasn't shutting the door either. Like, so he obviously saw Ben in practice. He knew he was going through stuff. He knew he was playing 3-on-3. Like, I think in Steve Nash's mind somewhere in the recesses of it, he was thinking this guy might be coming back.
Well, that, yes. But also I think if you asked anyone who was there day to day asking the questions, they felt like Steve more often than not said, no, I don't know if he's doing light shooting. He's doing light on court work. He's not even doing X, Y, Z yet. I think when it comes to surgery, I'm not going to act like I'm anywhere close to having the ability or the education to speak on this in a way. But to me, so much of surgery sometimes, at whatever point of the year and whatever they figure, if it was about nerves, I mean, I was trying to read up on this, but again, I don't know, whatever the disc, whatever the surgery was called. Now I can't remember. You can make me pull up the press
micro discoctomy. I don't know what it was, but it was, more like the timetable of it that stunned me.
Yeah. Like, but, you know, but just in about like where you're relieving the success rate of it, where you're relieving some of the stress or pressure, on your different nerves or on your, like all of those things to me, I'm sure that's not an easy decision because back surgery is a big deal, but okay. Hey, you either may be dealing with this pain or dealing with the stuff you have been, and it's going to be up and down, or you have the off season to finally get this right, try and make this better and rehab. And then the hope is for the start of the season, for the start of your career too. Like I think when they were looking at Ben in all the conversations about him, there was also the preservation of, we're not just talking about the end of this year or this postseason or even next season. Like, you are a young player, a young individual that you need to think about the longevity of your career, and back issues at that age, that's a real thing. And mm-hmm. So what can we do to make sure that however you're laying the foundation of setting things up to try and find a way to be consistently healthy, that would just be my perception of this feels like the best avenue. And I have no idea who was involved in the decision-making process, how that all works, but how do we make sure that we are setting you up down a path that for the better part of your career, maybe this won't be a chronic issue or a continued issue.
Yeah,
So I do think going from playing to surgery, but that's the same. I mean, backs are different than ankles, but the same thing. Seth Curry, I imagine, would have been playing until the Nets got knocked out. And once they did, okay, we're going to get the scope on your ankle or, you know, do whatever to clean things up, because now you have some time to improve that. So to me, that's a like-minded comparison of, all right, let's try and get this right, so we're not dealing with this every single day back and forth as you head into next year.
Yeah, and you do got to play something of a long game with Simmons. You got him for 3 more years, 100 plus million left on that contract. You got to hope that this offseason, a full training camp, he'll get back, he'll get into a rhythm, and he can be that versatile defender that the Nets badly need him to be.
Well, for what you're talking about with the Nets need, like, they need a Ben Simmons. Like, they need the guys, and there's multiple other players they're going to make decisions, contractual decisions on, and who else you look for. But in some regard, like, they needed the guys that were sitting on the bench in street clothes, mm-hmm. Or weren't fully healthy. Like, that's a major factor and a major part of it.
Well, they've also got to get younger on that bench. Like, you can't, I mean, the exhuming of Blake Griffin late in the postseason, like, didn't work. Like, they've got to get some guys.
But he was, yeah. And but he was someone, you looked at how he played at the end of last postseason, yeah, and took less money. And that felt like a big re-signing. Like, that felt like a big, big boost. And then you look at how he performed in the early part of the season. That's where there was a lot of, yeah, you know, over the course of the year, like, just how many changes, some through injury, availability, COVID, but there was so much just fluidity with the lineup based on who's going to give you what, and the lack of consistency of knowing what guys are going to give you. And that's a challenging place to be in, especially with, yeah, there was a lot, man.
You need more Bruce Browns. Like, you got to bring back Bruce Brown and need like two or three more guys like that. Guys that can play a couple of positions, defend at a pretty high level, good athleticism. Like, that's the kind of guy you need on that bench or part of that rotation.
Oh, well, and he, I mean, he's one of my absolute favorites, but even just like,
that's because he's from Boston attitude. And you love people from Boston is what, you know,
that too. No, but even his attitude, like even the energy he brought, like they needed someone, like they needed a dog out there. Like he did all times, all games, no matter what point of the year. And that was very evident when he was inserted into the starting lineup.
Yeah. No, he's excellent. And that's the kind of guy they need, you know, whether it's the draft, free agency, like they've done well, obviously, picking up those veteran guys in the buyout market and in the offseason, guys like Griffin, Aldridge, Patty Mills, just to name a few. But you got to get young guys, long guys, you know, wing defendery guys. I know everybody wants those types of guys, but those are the difference makers, I think, for Brooklyn next year.
And that was evident. And even how the young Kessler Edwards, I mean, he was thrown in the fire, rookie, but like, what does he look like coming in next year? How do the rookies of, you know, De'Ron Sharp and Cam Thomas, how do they progress? So, yeah, but
I couldn't believe Cam Thomas could not get off the bench. And you know Cam Thomas better than I. Maybe he couldn't defend and the Celtics would have targeted him in the same way that they targeted Blake Griffin. But I'm watching Durant out there just drag his body up and down the floor against a physical Celtics defense. And I'm kind of wondering, like, is Cam Thomas that bad that you can't just sit Durant for like 120 seconds and give him a break? Because that might have made a difference. Like, it was a game four when he missed the free throw, you know, that, and Durant never misses free throws in those situations.
Game four.
It was towards the end where the free throw, I think, would have.
I almost think it was game three, but maybe it was game four.
Yeah, one or the other. But like, it was, he just was tired, man. Like, he was just going 46 minutes. The guy that had an ACL tear like 3 years ago.
Well, and that's how he and Kyrie were playing the final weeks of the season. Like they were scraping.
That was tough.
In
that
the
was
playoffs
tough. Yeah.
In the first place. So
and
they
had
were
to. Yeah.
40 plus minutes, you know, so you wonder how that all adds up.
Yeah, no question. Well, I'm sure you will address all of it tomorrow, Sarah, when you are speaking with Sean.
Send me your questions.
I will. You say this is courtesy of Chris Mannix.
Then they will ask me to please leave.
Please leave. Sarah, you never have to leave this podcast. I appreciate you coming on with me, and I'll make sure that Beck invites you on for the podcast. You want to come on.
I used to be a regular on your old podcast, and now I really was. I was starting to feel left out.
Yes. Well, I will be sure to have you back. I appreciate it, Sarah.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.